Hello, and welcome to RA Podcast, the official Retro Achievements podcast. Today we've got another roundtable edition for you guys. I'm Bindi Human, and I'll be hosting today's proceedings, and I'm joined at the table by some amazing people, starting off with Draco655.
Well, thank you, Bindi, for having me into this very good roundtable. I'm very happy to be here.
Of course, always great to have you. We also have here seated at the table King Sizzle.
Yo, what's up? Glad to be back.
Glad to have you, Sizzle. And finally, we have a very special guest for this week's episode. Ladies and gentlemen, Shin Ciro.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're really happy to have you here. And I think we've got a topic for today that you're going to have a lot to contribute to. So to get things started for today, we're going to be talking RPGs. I want to get the ball rolling by asking you guys, think about your favorite RPG series, and anyone can jump into this when they have an answer. What is it about your favorite RPG series that really makes that series so special to you?
I guess I'll jump in first. My favorite series, my favorite RPG series is the Breath of Fire series. It focuses on a mute hero, he's a dragon. Or he gains his dragon powers sometime during the game. And all along the way, he's getting a bunch of different characters from a variety of different walks of life. And they usually come together to fight this anti-dragon. And even though the hero is mute, there's just a whole bunch of different themes and ideas that are explored. At least in the beginning of the series. I know that's kind of changed a lot as the series progressed, but yeah, that's my favorite one.
For me, my favorite RPG, I think it's very close. I have two main RPGs I would like to talk about. Is I pretty much my, I think if our Pokemons are one of the RPGs, I think I would take it. But I think, yeah, Pokemon, I think is my most favorite RPG series. Because I think it's adorable as the cute Pokemon fighting each other is getting XPs. And I think this is the very first moment when I was a child, I grew up with RPGs. So this is one of my favorite. I mean, they have like a lot of Pokemon games into these days. And it's always constantly evolving. So it's very, I mean, this is the best. And I think the second one I do kind of like is I don't know if this can't count, but I think Tales of Symphonia, which is a very great fighting game, but I think it's a little bit RPG-wise fighting style at the same time. And it's almost like battle by battle with bosses. So I think maybe that can. I don't know if I'm sure or not, but Tales of Symphonia is always something where I did enjoy a lot when I play on my GameCubes. And yeah, that's a great, very fun series.
I haven't played much of Breath of the Fire. It sounds pretty interesting, and a lot of people say it's really fun. I played a bunch of Pokemon. I think my favorite RPG is the tactical strategy kind of RPGs, like Shining Force. That's a really good one, especially for the Sega Genesis, the first one and the second one. They have amazing music. The sprite work in that game is really cool, really clean, and it's just overall, it's just a really cool, fun experience going back-to-back to battles on this, like, quest to save the land over this evil tyranny. Just to mention something about Draco's point of the Tales of Symphonia series, or the Tales of series. I've played some of those. They have really good intros. I think Tales of Zethra, I think that's what it is. They have, like, it's one of my favorite songs. There's White Light. That's a really good song. I need to come back to pick that up eventually. But yeah, those are RPGs too, Draco. They're kind of like just a walking around mostly. And I guess you could call them modern RPGs because it's got that like open world kind of feel. But at the same time, you have to do the battles and they're more action-y and stuff.
And going along with that, I'm excited as well as I know Draco's excited about when GameCube is finally available on RA. Because yeah, I'm definitely going to be doing the Tales of Symphonia. But Draco, there is one on PlayStation. It's in the US, it's called Tales of Destiny 2, and I think everywhere else it's Tales of Eternia. I have requested a set for that, and maybe you could help it along by also requesting a set, because Eternia, it has less characters than Symphonia, but I mean, it's still got that same fundamental part of the Tales series of that kind of like fighting game mechanic mixed with RPG elements.
I feel like RPGs are one of those genres where it's like, how do you even define an RPG, right? I listen to the answers that you guys are all giving, and these games are so wildly different from one another. And I'm thinking of my favorite RPG series, and it's another one that's wildly different from anything you guys have mentioned. For me, it's the Mario RPGs. Specifically, it's like the Paper Mario games and the Mario and Luigi games. And I guess Super Mario RPG, I'm just lumping them all into one series, because why not? I think for me, the biggest draw of those games is, you know, obviously we talk about all the great things about RPGs, like the music and all of that. But for me, it all comes down to the battle system. And those games have just the perfect battle system. I personally like the turn-based style of RPG more so than the real-time or action or strategy RPGs or any of those. But, I feel like that one works so well because it takes the turn-based battle system, but it adds in certain elements of timing. So it's not overly passive. It's not just choosing options in a menu. But at the same time, it's a game that's easy to play without, like, you don't have to turn on your brain and think super hard. You can just kind of go through the motions. But there is that little bit of strategy, that little bit of timing. And for me personally, that's just like the perfect balance. I love it so much.
Yeah, the Paper Mario series, or just the Paper Mario RPG games. Oh, I just said Paper Mario, but anyway, the Mario RPG games are really cool. Just like you mentioned, that they have those timing and kind of like the rhythm-based combat battle systems, where it's like it's turn-based, but it's also kind of like a rhythm game where you have to like time your jumps, time your actions, but also you can also time your defensive movements as well, and time over the people attacking. Like you can press the A button to you know, get that higher defense to block the enemy's attack, or tap the A button to attack harder. And that's really cool. It's not like every RPG game has that kind of system. I think the Mario RPGs are more so like that. Maybe they're looser, kind of like, maybe I don't know why they did that, but at the same time, it's like it's really cool, and it gives that uniqueness to the Mario RPGs. And It is much, very much different from the other RPGs, because you wait there, you do your moves, do your magic, and kind of just sit there waiting for everything to, you know, come back to you.
I remember playing Super Mario RPG. I think I actually still have the cart. I haven't done the set yet. The set's a little scary. I don't know about the rest of you, but I was never able to get those 100, I think, what, ultra jumps for the super shirt. But, like, going along with what Bendy said, yeah, the combat system also matters to me as well. And I'll actually, like, play a variety, whether it's that kind of action-y Tales of series, or Breath of Fire is pretty similar to, like, the older Dragon Quest series. But then there's also the to also share with Draco's love of Pokemon, there's a sort of demonic Pokemon. It's the Shin Megami Tensei series, where you're like, you're kind of capturing demons and having them join your party. That's also Pokemon-esque as well. So like, I'm recalling what Bendy said, talking about like RPGs, and yeah, there's so many different types of combats system, so many different stories, and yeah, there's a lot for you if you like, whether that's slower gameplay or even more action oriented.
That's very true. I mean, Shinsero and Bendy have made a great point there about, like, Bendy mentioned about the turn based, because it's true. I mean, like, some of the time when you play RPGs, like, if you need to love the combat mechanic, because if you don't, I think you're gonna have, like, for me, I'm gonna have like almost a bad time, or I would never enjoy the fighting games. And then you brought out the Super Mario jumps, like the jumps. I know that jump is very precise, and I really hate to doing it personally. But I mean, like Super Mario RPG on the Super NES, I think like this game is just like so wonderful. I mean, like you have everything there, and I totally forgot about those where it existed. And like since you mentioned Paper Mario, and Paper Mario on the GameCube, like I spent like so much time, and you have like those unique like storyline which give you like a good feeling about doing this. Even on the N64, those RPG are the best, and I was never thought there would be RPG for 2 seconds, but yeah, I mean they exist, and I was like, oh man. And I wanted to mention another point about like I know people can like love a lot Final Fantasy, and I did try to dig into it, but Final Fantasy is never something I really enjoy, like the mechanic of the battles. Because like one, they have like a lot of spells and stuff, which maybe it's fine to learn, but I don't like the system where you have to wait. Like I think it's like a bar, and you have to wait, and then the you can use your you can have your turn in some way. So those type of thing I just don't like. I prefer more the Pokemon system where it's turn by turn, so you expect to know like you can take your time and having your turn. And also like for me, it's like always like a subject into between a crossover between the Dragon Quest series and the Final Fantasy series, because for me Dragon Quest series, I feel personally they are better. I like more their cartoonish styles, graphic styles, and everything about Dragon Quest than I'm looking at Final Fantasy. I did try, like I think my girlfriend said like, oh, Final Fantasy 7 is the best one. You should try it. And I try it, but I just still don't understand why this game is so much popular in some ways. Yes, they can have like some crazy maybe aspect to it, but to me, the graphic wires don't appeal to me. And other factor about the systems of how the game is or what the little backstory there is do not appeal to me. So for me, if you put me more Dragon Quest style into the Final Fantasy style, probably more I would like it more. But for me, the Dragon Quest is way better than that.
Yeah, it's, you know, we like to give you a hard time for not liking Final Fantasy, Draco, but honestly, I do understand where you're coming from. I think it's great that we live in a world where there are so many vastly different RPGs out there that we could all sort of gravitate towards the specific ones we like, right? Because certain battle systems or certain art styles or certain, you know, progression, all sorts of things, certain gameplay styles might not mesh with certain people and others might. You were talking a little bit about the, I believe it's called the active time battle system that's used in some of the like SNES and PlayStation Final Fantasies and things like Chrono Trigger, games like that. And for anyone who hasn't played those games, it's a weird halfway point between a menu-based, turn-based battle system and a real-time battle system. So basically, each party member and each of your opponents, your enemies, have this bar that's moving along as time passes. And that bar basically tells you what order everyone's going to move in. The thing I don't really like about it is the bar continues moving while you're in menus. So essentially what it does is it punishes you the longer you take to decide your actions in each turn. And I guess the issue I have with that is, when I feel like I'm being punished for taking time to decide my actions in each turn, I'm more likely to just end up spamming the attack button every single turn, unless I'm in a boss against a boss or something and have to use my spells. And as much as I like turn-based RPGs, I feel like they're best when they have that little bit of extra thought, that little bit of extra strategy. And I think that's a very difficult, it's a difficult conundrum for RPGs. How do you strike that balance where, on one hand, you don't want every single regular mob encounter to be overwhelming, right? But on the other hand, you don't want the battles to become mindless, where you could just mash A through everything. Like, as much as I love Pokemon, once you get experienced with the games, I feel like it kind of gets to that point where you could just mindlessly go through the motions. Dragon Quest, another series I love, but there are moments where it kind of gets like that, though it depends on which game in the series you're playing. Some of them do get quite hard. But anyway, yeah, I'm interested in your guys' thoughts on this. RPG battle systems, what works for you, what doesn't?
So, Bendy, I feel like someone that's played Final Fantasy, though, I might have a solution for the issue that you were having specifically. That have you gone into the options and changed the system from active to wait? Because with the wait one, if you go into, let's say, the item menu or the magic menu, the game basic, like the enemies, they don't gain bar, they don't gain what, movement or the act, like their charge bar doesn't increase. So you can just wait. I mean, you could just take your time with that.
You know, I think it's great when RPGs give players options. The only time I do know the setting you're talking about. The only time I've enabled that is when I played Chrono Trigger one time. And I didn't leave that option on for long because it felt wrong, even though it is more in line with my style of gameplay. It felt like, you know, this game's battle system. I can't just toggle it off, then it's just a completely different game, which it sounds like I'm contradicting myself, right? It makes no sense that this game would give me exactly what I say I wanted, and then I say, oh, but I don't actually want that. So I don't know. Maybe I don't know what I want. I really don't know.
Well, okay, with you bringing that up, I'm actually, it's a developer, Suffa. He was, it's Suffa 28. He recently added a set for, I assume, Bendy, that you've played Final Fantasy 6 or 3 on the Super Nintendo?
I have, but not on RA.
Okay, well, the vanilla one on RA, it's too much for me, but there is a nice compromise in this hack that came out that I'm also glad that RA has added. In fact, just to go into a different genre, like Super Mario World has, you know, so many different hacks, but you might want to check out, Final Fantasy VI Brave New World, because for the original game of Final Fantasy III, it was like just very easy, but Brave New World changes enough things so that there's a compromise between the battles are, they're never mindless, they require more thought. Like, for example, do you remember on the floating continent with Atma Weapon, Bendy?
Yeah.
Okay. So for before it was, I think, like, Mog could actually, like, use a certain type of dance and insta-kill Atma Weapon. Now the battle is much more involved, and actually, I think in the original game, once you did enough damage, it started charging and started using more powerful attacks. Now what you're supposed to do is actually use Dispel with Celis when it starts charging up, and that wrecks with its with using like Ultima or other stuff like that. So, there is an increase in difficulty with the hack, but once you start understanding the kind of new systems with it, the battles are a lot less mindless.
That's really cool. I wasn't aware of that hack in particular. I do know, though, that lots of RPGs do have all sorts of rebalancing hacks or hard mode hacks, or a lot of the ones that were only released overseas even have things like translation hacks, right? So, yeah, I think you make a good point that in many cases, the original release of an RPG isn't necessarily the best way of experiencing it. Of course, that's up to interpretation, but
definitely. It's
nice that we have those options for sure.
So speaking about your question you asked earlier, Bendy, about the battle system, I was really thinking about it, and I feel, I mean, it's for me, like, even if I play Pokemon, even if I play, like, any type of RPGs, I feel like the more you have experience, because like experience is making like a lot of the time the game easier or sometimes stressful. If you're on the levels and you're fighting a boss, you can have like a most, you need to like really think hard about what you have to do. But into the upper end, if you spend a lot of time, like most of the Pokemon game, or even maybe like, I mean, a lot of RPG, I feel like a lot of RPG, if you're just mashing the attack buttons and you're just super overpowered and you fight every single enemy, you don't even need to worry about anything else in the game. You don't have to worry about how you're going to deal with this one. You don't need to do like what is the weakness of this boss. You just smash the attack button. And most of the time, I feel most of the RPG work, maybe like some older Final Fantasy, older Dragon Quest, maybe some Pokemon, just smash one attack. You're super overpowered and you gain a lot more experience because you just grind it out. And I feel like even on Tales of Fate, you're just like, doesn't matter if you have like a better weapons, less good weapons or stuff like that. You can always beat the game into different ways by just mashing one button, which is the only attack button. So don't worry about defense, spells or anything. So that's pretty much what I feel about the battle system, which is very interesting.
I think that also gets into that idea how different people approach RPGs in different ways, right? I know for me, I'm the type of person who I will never run away from a random encounter. I'm going to fight every single random encounter. Or if there's optional fights, I'm going to do every single optional fight. But the thing is, different RPGs have different methods of balancing. Some of them expect you to do every fight that comes your way. Some of them are on the easier side where you could skip fights and still be fine. And then you have ones where you could do every single fight that comes along your way, and then you're still underleveled. You still need to grind. So again, it gets back to that point I brought up earlier where there are so many different RPGs out there, and they all have these different little fine-tuning, these how each little element of the game works, that I feel like it's hard to just outright say. It's hard for anyone to outright say, I don't like RPGs as a genre. I feel like if you really look, there's probably something for you somewhere out there in the sea of RPGs.
Even for me, who doesn't have much time to play RPGs, has found some kind of RPG that I really like the Shining Force or just the tactical strategy. I'm kind of like one of those people who really enjoy like the attack systems. Like, I don't know if this counts as an RPG, but this is like an action RPG, but Kingdom Hearts. Kingdom Hearts has like that kind of RPG kind of feel, but at the same time, the combat is really fun and really nice. And I guess you could kind of apply the same things to tactical RPGs where you can come at different scenarios and different battles at different, like, you know, different ways. You can, you know, set all your people up at one point. You can set all your people up at another point. And it's just the combat of these two games I really enjoy. And I really like having, like, multiple battles in them. And I would just, like, keep restarting the battle or, you know, attacking the same group of enemies more than once because I just enjoy the battle. And I guess the same thing could be said about Mario, Paper Mario or Mario RPG, is that when the combat system for me, I really enjoy it. I seem to grind a lot more than I would with Final Fantasy or Pokemon because it's just, for some reason, it's just, it's not as, you know, entertaining for me. I don't know why. I'm pretty sure Drake could back me up, or maybe he can like say something against my argument, but for me, it's just watching the two sprites jump up and down and do like different, you know, things when we're not really moving around or there's nothing other else happening. It just seems kind of like, oh, I'm just pressing the A button. You know, there's no, I can't move my character around the other character, or I can't, you know, bring someone else in while alongside of my other ally who is attacking like in a tactical RPG, because you have like, you can have like four different people on top of one other person, and you can like simultaneously attack them.
All right. I know I've had this discussion with Retrosexual before, but like, and Bendy's also kind of brought this up as well, but like, I don't really like those kind of RPGs where there's this kind of mindless grinding. I kind of like this more mindful grinding where like you have to pay attention to phases and stuff like that. But I mean, for something like Tales of Symphonia, there is at least one outlet. There's the, I know this is in the future for RA, or at least I'm hopeful it is. But there is like hard moan and mania mode for that, so that you can't just kind of just attack or use Demon Fang. But I mean, there is for like really high quality RPGs, at least for the ones that I'm thinking of, I always appreciate those ones where you can actually win the game at a low level, and it's and as long as you get enough money, although that can be also a different kind of grind, as long as you're paying attention to like certain characters' innate abilities, you can actually win at a very low level. Like I know, for example, Bendy probably knows about this guy, Gao in Final Fantasy III for the Super Nintendo, VI for everywhere else. He, because of his berserk rages with different enemies, he has access to so much more power, depending on the rages that he gets, compared to the rest of the party at very on early in the game. Like, for example, I know Gao, he has this, it's a cat scratch, and it's from this little kitty cat enemy. It does like three or four times the regular kind of physical damage. He can learn, quote unquote, magic much earlier in the game than the rest of the people. It's just for some RPGs, there's that sort of higher quality in that, like, you can actually win the game earlier without having to do a ton of grinding.
Speaking of something you mentioned, like, I don't know if we have crossed the line at the same time, but I was actually wanted to talk about grinding a little bit. Because RPGs, I think this is the genre where you have to do like a lot of grinding. It depends on the game you play. Like Pokemon, you have to grind some levels. And this is, like I said, this is the genre where it's like, it's like, those people like the grinding much or not? Because like some of the games, you actually need to rather collect a lot of items. And it's very like, you have to spend a lot of hours for just doing one stuff, just to grinding, like example, to level 100, or your Pokemon to level 100, which is take a lot of times. Or rather you take like, our RPG is like, well, I'm very on the level, I have to grind it up. And sometimes the monster don't give you a lot of experience. So most of the games, it's a lot of grinding. And I want to see like how people feel about grinding and grinding achievements by himself, because grinding is a lot. And I know one thing which Shin told me many times. He told me the Mega Man series with the RPG style with like the network kind of game, don't touch it. Don't touch it, Draco. It's just too much grinding. You will hate it. You will suffer your life the entire way. Just don't touch it. It's maybe RPG, but yeah.
I'll go into that later, but okay. I'd like to warn everybody here. There is a lot of grinding with the early Battle Network games. Sorry, Bendy.
Oh, no, you're good. You're good. I think that grinding is one of those things everyone has an opinion on, right? It could really make or break an RPG depending on how you feel about it. I think for me personally, the ideal balance is if you fight every enemy that comes your way, you should be able to progress through the game, but you shouldn't be able to steamroll the game. But at the same time, if you're fighting every enemy that comes your way, I feel like you shouldn't have these arbitrary roadblock where it's like, well, now I need to grind for a super long time before I can beat this boss. I like when RPGs have a progression where you can beat the bosses or the stumbling points, but it isn't necessarily going to be easy, where grinding might make it easier, but it isn't outright required. I know the classic example that comes to mind for me is, kind of a weird example, but the Paper Mario games, right? I always found the Paper Mario games to be pretty easy. If you fight every enemy that comes your way, you probably won't have much trouble in the game. But one thing I found interesting that Draco taught me is you can actually do low-level runs and you can beat the bosses when you're super underleveled. And I didn't know that. That was entirely new to me. So it's just interesting to see how you can kind of break RPGs when you know their mechanics. But I do think, you know, grinding in general should be something that makes things easier, but isn't necessarily required, or if it's required, it's only in small doses. That's just me anyway.
I think a lot of RPGs could be better without the grinding or the massive grind, but like I mentioned before, I think for me at least, the grinding is pretty fun as long as the combat's fun. Like in Mario, Paper Mario, like you mentioned, that combat's really fun. So, I mean, I like grinding in that game. And I didn't know you could, you know, defeat the bosses without grinding. But it's just, for me, grinding is fun when the combat's fun. Getting to know my spells, getting to know all my abilities and my characters, and oh, I want to get all my people up to the same level. And then, you know, if there's a benchmark of, hey, I can upgrade this character at like this, like level 10, like in Shining Force, I might do that on the first fight because it's like, oh, well, if I can get a lot of XP and I get, you know, I like this combat system and I can just, you know, test whatever I can do for future battles, I might as well do that because it's, you know, the combat's pretty fun, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of RPGs could be a lot better, more open to new players if they didn't have as much grinding, because I know that in the modern, like the recent modern RPGs, like what's it called, the Octopath Traveler was one of those games where people were like, oh, this game has you grind a lot, it's really hard. And from what a person on the outside of RPGs, it seems like that's like a negative point of, I don't want to touch that RPG or go into it because it seems like a lot of commitment if I have to grind so many hours. But I think if RPGs like loosen that up a little bit and like, oh, you could just, you know, play through the game and you get all your XP inside of like the missions and the battles without having to grind, that's more fun and open. But at the same time, maybe they should have like some kind of difficulty modifier, like, oh, if you want to grind, we will, you know, make the enemies harder for you and so on. Just an idea.
I think you make some really good points, Sizzle. And I've noticed that as I grow older, my mindset towards games I enjoy, and RPGs in particular, has sort of shifted. Because the big thing that grinding does is it pads out the length of the game, right? It could add hours and hours to the total playtime. When I was a kid, that was a great thing. That was a positive. Because, you know, you only get new games once in a while. It's a very uncommon occurrence. So when I'd get a new game, I'd want to milk that game for all it's worth. That game takes me a really long time just to beat the game. That's perfect. That's awesome. Nowadays, I'm an adult. I have less free time. And with retro achievements especially, I've kind of moved toward the mindset of, I like to play a game, then move on to the next game. It's very difficult for me to sink my teeth into a giant, massive RPG. One more thing I wanted to touch on real quick is, you brought up Octopath Traveler. And I've played that game, and I do enjoy it, but I feel like that game might be an example of sort of pushing too far in one direction. And here's what I mean by that. I talked earlier about how I don't like RPGs where you could just mindlessly mash the attack button and win every single battle, right? I like it where there has to be that little bit of strategy, even if it's a turn-based RPG. For me personally, I feel like Octopath went a little too far in that direction. I love the battle system. I think it's maybe one of the greatest battle systems I've experienced in a turn-based classic JRPG. But it gets old when you're doing it for every single mob encounter. When you're just trying to walk through an area and every single random encounter, you're like, okay, I gotta really think. I gotta plan through every move. It almost makes me miss the more mindless, just mash through it. I think it's a fantastic battle system, but like, I can't play that game for super long periods of time. It's weirdly exhausting to me. I don't know if anyone else can relate to that experience, but it's like, I'll play a little bit and then feel like, okay, I need a break. That was a workout, you know?
Or is this another example where Bendy just doesn't know what he really wants?
Maybe that's the theme of today's episode. You might be onto something, dude. I think you're right.
Bendy, I totally agree. Let's see. I started. I know we're talking more about a more modern game, and I actually have something to say right for something that's in the style, sort of style of Octopath Traveler. But yeah, after you get a certain amount of characters in that game, like, the enemies just get too inflated health pools, and I'd actually say the battles do become mindless, because I think what it saves telling you like what their weakness is, and then you have to hit their weakness with like a couple times before it breaks their shield, and then they have these massive pools if for each character that you've gotten. Like, I think I have two more, and I stopped the game picking up the archer, and I was just like, it's taking too long to kill you. Primrose is useless, and I liked her as a character, But like, yeah, some of the battle still feels easy. It just that it feels it takes too long. And going on with what was recently talked about with grinding, I feel like that's an issue for like Bravely Default 2. Because I'll hear about people saying, like, unless you grind an exorbitant amount, like, I'll watch a couple streamers, like, grind for that game off screen, then go into a boss battle, and then, like, four or five times they just get steamrolled. And it's like, yeah, when I was young, like really young, it was like, oh my gosh, I'm after school, I'm tired of, I'm bored of homework and all this other kind of stuff. I can just sink hours and hours into this. But now it's kind of like, I appreciate systems that make it so I don't need to grind, but I'm still strong enough. Like, I agree with you completely, Bendy. If I'm fighting everything along the way and I'm not, you know, just going back and forth, I should be strong enough for the next story point. Maybe not strong enough for super bosses, but I should be strong enough.
One thing Benny mentioned, which I was really happy he mentioned, it was the Paper Mario when we play together to play these RPGs. Like, I know for me, I am like more into a speedrun players than Benny is. So like, I know like little twists and trick to just go faster. And this is the first time where I was like, Benny, if we just like don't do that and we can just beat this boss without just dodging everything, it's like, it's no way we're gonna get this. But yeah, I mean, trust me, we can go there. And it's like, this is the first time I was like, yeah, we can do that, Ben. It's like, oh my god, we actually can do that. And it's just for me, like, the way I want to see here is like, it's the same way as Octopath Travelers. I did speed on a little bit, like all the first mission stories, and it's just like pick up those items here and there, grind maybe like a few, and you just like select your spells. But the one point I wanted to point here is like, I'm just fascinated how much you don't have to grind. Because like most of the time, you know, like as maybe like a speedrunner, a whisper. Anyway, as you look at the game, you like exactly know like where you have to pick up. You know exactly how much the boss have enough health and stuff. So you can always, it's always like one step at a time. It's the same way as the Paper Mario's. If you use these items, use that, and then you just do that, it won't be dead. It's always like turn-based, so you can always planify your ways. So if you know exactly what to do, this is where you can really see like, wow, you can do that on RPGs. Another fact, like where I'm very intrigued about RPGs in general, it's really an RPG, and some of the time I really want to do it, and some of the RPG have a lot of points into it, but they take so much time to accomplish it. And if, like I said, like we have different goals into RAs, and I really want to play like a lot of RPGs, and I have a lot of respect to a lot of players, I've done crazy amount of RPGs because they're just time consuming. So one thing I have learned a lot, and I don't know like if you want to say like what you learn into RPGs, but for me, one thing I can learn from them is you have to be very much patient with the game you play and keep going until it's done. Because, oh man, you need to take a lot of patience to just beat one thing or to grind to the other thing. So grinding can be fun, but grinding need a lot of patience. So I'm very curious to see what you have learned through RPGs.
The first thing I wanted to say before I answer your question is I think it's really interesting that you bring up this idea of speedrunning RPGs, because I don't watch a ton of speedruns, but I watch some here and there from time to time, and you would think that RPGs would be like the worst suited genre for speedrunning, right? Because they're all about that grinding and that long time investment, but actually, that's not really the case. I think with RPGs, you could get really interesting with the routing. It's fascinating to see how people figure out how to route these games, exactly what items to pick up, exactly which bosses to fight or which enemies to fight, which to avoid. And then, of course, a lot of RPGs have random variables like random encounters. So how you factor that into your decisions on the fly as you're going, that's just fascinating to me. The people who run those are so ingenious. But I did want to address your question real quick, Draco, what you've learned playing RPGs. I think one of the big things I've learned is with RPGs, sometimes I need to relax my completionist tendencies a little. And here's what I mean by that. I'm the type of person who likes to explore every little corner of the game, find every treasure, get all the optional stuff. And I feel like RPGs can be some of the most punishing extreme games to try to 100% complete or 200% complete on RA. There always tends to be some crazy hard post-game final extra super bonus challenge, or sometimes it's really easy to miss certain things in certain areas, like, oh, you missed that one treasure chest, but we're not going to tell you where it is. Or sometimes there's things like missables. Oh, you didn't do this at this point in the story, so now it's gone. So as difficult as it is for me, I feel like RPGs are the types of games where I need to just sort of relax and try to have fun with it and not necessarily go full completionist when the game is a little too extreme in that regard.
I actually didn't know that Draco did speed run some RPGs, because I mean, I know he speed ran Mario Kart 8 in a lot of racing games, but I didn't know he actually did RPGs. And speed running RPGs is kind of like a fascinating thing for me as well, because it's just you gotta know the pattern and the routes and stuff, but also at the same time you have those moments where the AI can just like keep giving you all these different fights, and you're just like, I need to not do these fights right now. I just need to keep going. Maybe Draco can explain more how speedrunning RPG works. But that's really fascinating that I didn't know that he did a lot of RPGs.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that either. And Bendy, to go back with what you were saying, like I've watched Dan Carnot speed run Final Fantasy, the what is it, Mystic Quest, before I found out about RA and Draco. And actually, the first person introduced me to RA was Mr. Game Squad Squad, top guy on RA. I used to watch manipulated glitchless runs of Earthbound, and that was a type of game, or that was a type of speed run that I think the speedrunners, like the chance of you leaving the initial town of Onette was something like, I think it was like 11% chance that you had to do that, because what would happen is in Earthbound is you'd have to be walking a certain way, you'd have to select things in the menus a certain way, so that it would basically tell the AI, oh, do this. And then on top of that, because how many of you are familiar with Earthbound's like HP system?
So yeah, because speaking about the sizzle question about how, I mean, yeah, I'm surprisingly I did some Octopath Traveler speedruns. Well, I did not did much of it. I know it was just very a little bit popular, but not much. I just wanted to give a shot because I really like the music and stuff about this game. It was just so fun to try. So the only speedrun I did was I think was 80% to doing every single character route. Or the first chapter of every single characters. So how it was working is I think I try with the wizard. Yeah, I think I go for the wizard guide, and then you have it to just after you have done these little missions, you need it to go into is I think you can have a chance for one encounters, which I think was I don't remember the encounter was, but if you could just that one specific one, you gain like a bunch of levels already. I think you gain like 10 levels or 12 levels in one go. And then you just set and go. And after that, the entire way you're just going to each character very fast, you needed to drop every single item you pick up, which like bombs and stuff like that. And you know exactly like when you hit this another level, you get this another skill. So the only thing you have to do is like you save before a boss and you see which level you are, which item you have. If you take this bomb and this attack, what it would do, and most of the time it's just like two, three or turn, maybe like most of the time 5 turns. If everything go well, the boss is defeated. And then you just go on every single path and then you're just done. And I think I have completed the first chapter like maybe like in less than an hour, which is not that amazing, but still like It's just like how anything RPG can just be planned out. You don't have to fight everything. You just need to do the amount of damage minimum. You know which level you go into. And like some speedrun, I have watched some Wessler speedrun Pokemon Urgot and Silver, and it was like at the last boss, you know, like the last rival fight, he was getting this level specific there to learn a move to his random Pokemon, and then to just like when he have like zero usage of his item, to just get the new item that you want to kill this specific Pokemon and to end the speedrun. So you plan the entire route for just a little a moment like that. This is unbelievable. So this is pretty much the same as any type of RPG speedrun order or people uses.
Yeah, speedrunners never cease to amaze me, especially when they go to those sorts of lengths like you were describing there. Really impressive stuff. I'd like to take a moment to circle back to something Shinsero was starting to bring up about the health system in Earthbound. So my understanding of the system, and I think this is in Mother 3 as well, it's a rolling health system. So basically, when you take damage, your health is a number displayed on screen. It's not a bar or anything, it's just a number. And that number gradually rolls lower and lower based on the damage that you take. But the interesting thing is, you can heal while that number is decreasing. Even if you would have taken fatal damage, even if you've taken enough damage for it to fall to zero, you could heal really quickly while it's decreasing and actually save yourself, which is just an absolutely wild RPG mechanic. I don't know how they came up with it, but it's so smart. I love it.
To go back into talking, I'll make it quick about the Earthbound speed running. You have to manipulate the menus. You have to manipulate your movement. And then on top of that, there are sometimes, like, I know there's a fight with the Onet police in the beginning. There's one where you have to take fatal damage and you have to mash A as fast as you can. And I think the top speedrunner at the time was saying something like, you can save yourself if you start at least, I think, at 21 HP. You're able to, and you've got your mash on, to quote him. If you tap fast enough, you can save yourself if you end up killing the enemy with the fatal question. But there's so much involved with speedrunning RPGs. I've even watched speedruns of the Mega Man Battle Network games that, like, there's a lot of manipulation, and it can get intense when you might have to move like a pixel so that the enemy will react a different way.
Well, as long as we're talking about speedruns, I think this is a good opportunity to pivot to our next topic. One of the most famous speedrun games out there, Super Metroid, right? That game has so many different routes you could take, such a fascinating route, both in planning and execution. And I want to take this opportunity to talk in general about Metroidvanias, the Metroidvania genre. I think this is something we may have touched on slightly previously on the podcast, but we never really got to delve deep into it, and especially not in this roundtables format. So if anyone doesn't know what a Metroidvania is, it's basically any game that takes on the style of the Metroid series, in the sense of you have an open world to explore and different items you collect that power up your character, or the later Castlevania games, which are inspired by Metroid, such as Symphony of the Night is the famous one, as well as the GBA and DS Castlevanias. So to start things off, I gotta ask you guys, what is your favorite Metroidvania or Metroidvania series, and why?
I speak my Metroidvanias. We actually have one for the achievement of the week right now. The Castlevania Harmony of Dishonest, or Dissonance. I probably butchered that name, but I just played through not all of it just now, or not just now, but earlier, and I really like that kind of like style. It was really fun and really fluid, and I want to say that might be one of my, you know, I guess I haven't really played much of Metroidvanias other than Super Metroid for a little bit, but I think that might be pretty close to what I have been playing. It's pretty fun. I like the dashing mechanic in it, and the the combat and movement and the leveling up system in that game. I know a lot of people have like different issues and people say that, you know, there's other games better than this one, but I haven't played them yet. And to my knowledge, it seems like this one's really fun. And I think maybe I'll put this one in my like top, you know, five or top 10 different Metroidvanias that I've played at least. I'm curious what you guys have to say about what your guys' favorite Metroidvania is, but that's one of my favorites right now.
Speaking of the Metroidvanias, Monster Tail is one by Cherry Birkin made. That game, I think this is like one of the first, I would say like the first, because I'm not into much like Castlevanias or even into like Super Metroidvania style or Metroidvania style, but Monster Tail, just a cute little side, because I really like cartoonish games in many ways. And this is one of them where you're just like shooting. It's pretty much like a Metroid games, but it's just more cuter. You have a little cute monster there. And this is the first game where I was really like digging the aspect of the Metroidvanias. Like some of the game is like back and forth, place to place. But in general, this game was phenomenal. It was so good. And I know like it's a game where not a lot of people have tried this before, which it's on the DS. But this game is just so much unique and stuff. Another game I did like, kind of, but I never liked. Like I said, I'm not into Castlevania, but I did try Aria Sarah for the GBA, I believe. And that game, that was pretty amazed how it was pretty smoothly. I enjoyed this a lot, but I'm not too much into Metroidvanias in some cases. But those two games, this is where I really enjoy my time.
Yeah, I caught some of your streams of Monster Tail. That game looked absolutely delightful. I think it's sort of a hidden gem. It's one of those games people really hadn't heard of. I know before I saw you play it, I had only heard of it in passing. But I didn't expect it to be as good as it was. I thought it'd be one of those games where it's just like, oh yeah, it's okay, you know, it's whatever. But yeah, honestly, if anyone out there likes Metroidvanias and they're looking for something new, check out Monster Tail. It's on the DS, it's on RA. It looks like a really cool game. I still haven't played it myself, but it's on my list. I gotta check it out.
I keep forgetting about Monster Tail. I've played it like a long time ago. Mostly on road trips, because I mean, when I was younger, I had a DSi, and Monster Tail was one of those games you can get on, I think, either the marketplace or I can't remember how I got it. I think it was a download, you know, like a DSi download, or maybe it was a 3DS download. But either way, I played it, and it was pretty fun, and I think it feels like a game made from the same company who makes Shantae. It kind of has that kind of same style. It has the same graphics. The company is slipping my mind right now. But it was a really cool game. It reminds me a lot of Shantae, with some like quirks and stuff. It's a very good Metroidvania. But for some reason, I keep forgetting about it. Maybe it's just me and I haven't really quite played it all. But I did play it in short bursts. Like, you know, oh, going to like, you know, the hotel, going to someone's house, you know. It was never really like in my room. It was always whenever I was on like a trip to somewhere. Way Forward. It just came back to me. Way Forward was the company who makes all the Shantae games and other games like that. And Monster Tail is one of those one of those games that it just feels like it's made by Way Forward. And it's just bizarre that some companies can do that kind of same aspect. And it has some good qualities to it. I would say check it out as well.
I was sitting here trying to think of my answer to the question, what's my favorite Metroidvania? And, you know, I was drawing a blank. I was really struggling to come up with my absolute favorite. I didn't even think of Shantae until you brought it up. And then I just had that moment of, oh, Shantae, I love Shantae. Shantae is, I mean, I would consider it a Metroidvania, but I would say it's a little bit more linear than a lot of Metroidvanias. The thing about Shantae is, well, I'm talking about the series in general. My favorite is probably Pirate's Curse. But the thing about Shantae is a lot of the collectibles that you find around the world, they aren't necessarily progression to open up new areas. The progression is more tied to like the dungeons and the main progression story beats. The collectibles you find around the world are more things like health upgrades and that sort of thing, or you'll have upgrades that you buy in a shop, which is a little unconventional for a Metroidvania. But I feel like one of the strengths of this genre is, in order for me to really like a Metroidvania, I need to really enjoy the general act of moving around and fighting enemies. Shantae just has that nice floaty jump, that satisfying hair whip. It never gets old. It's so satisfying. And that, for me, just really works well. I think that's also a big point why I really like games that focus more into the main, the Vania half of things. For example, the handheld Castlevania titles, they have that satisfying whipping. That whipping combat is just something that never gets old. So for me, even if I'm backtracking through an area for the 100th time, the simple act of taking out enemies as I go is just so enjoyable, and I think that's a big part of what makes me love a Metroidvania. You're going to be backtracking a lot, so there needs to be some way to make it so the game is still fun, even when you're going through repeat areas.
Bendy, I'm surprised you didn't... I recently got into Shantae as well. I got some of the games on the Switch, like the physical carts. Man, there's also the art style and just like the overall, like, you know, the entire time, even on the GB, on the Game Boy Color, Shantae's, you know, just kind of got this, she's got this rhythm going when she's just even, you know, just standing still. For me, I mean, it's kind of difficult for me. Let's see. I think it might be either Aria of Sorrow. I know I got really excited when the DS first came out with RA sets. I spent 2 days straight getting number one and finishing, you know, 200%ing for Dawn of Sorrow. For me, a lot of it is about the exploration, and exploration in terms of like something that the player should be able to figure out. I know I might be a minority with this, but there were a couple different things in that new Ritual of the Night that came out like a year or two ago that was kind of like, come on, Iga, who I guess popularized the Metroidvania genre. It was kind of like, those are things that I think shouldn't have been there. But for me, I think Dawn of Sorrow, or Aria of Sorrow, like, I really like the art style for Aria of Sorrow, are my favorites.
Yeah, I saw that Shin, when you really did like pass so fast into those set. I was like, okay, yeah, Shin got this. And I saw you in the like in the back, just that was very impressive to do. And then what I wanted to say here is about like RPGs and Metroidvanias, because like I think those two specific genres, I don't know if you opt with me, guys, but I think this is the most punishing one when you're probably trying to do like a 200% of the set. Because if you like me and Benny, who really like the badges or anything, anyone to just go for the badges, and you have a bunch of missables in two RPGs, and just like, you just look the set, you say like, you see 20, 30 missables, like, and you don't know the game, how it is. It's like, oh man, do I try it? Do I don't try it? I don't know. And you just don't know. Like, you actually don't know. Like, it's rather like you do like a amount of research for those missables. And sometimes you just don't know what you have to do. You just say a text and you have no idea what it means. And RP, like I said, like the RPG of Metroidvania, it's so punishing. Because if you miss one, like just like one stuff there, you have to what? Redo it entirely of the game twice, which is probably fine for some players. But if you play like a 20, 30 hours, 40 hours RPGs in the middle of it and you miss one of the missables there and you didn't even know, and you have one shot to get in, it hurts so much for some players. Like for me, it really hurt if you miss one of them. But I think, I don't know what you feel about what I just said, but for me, those two genres is really like, it's a little bit annoying if you have to redo a missable there if you mess it up.
I can totally see that as well. I'm only going to touch on this point, but there are in each of the Battle Network games, there are a ton of missables that pop up. Like, I know Battle Network 3 specifically, there's maybe, I want to say, 5 to 10 achievements that are just missable that unless you were on, I usually use GameFAQs, unless you were on GameFAQs and you just knew it ahead of time, you're going to miss out. And then if you save and there's only one save file, you're kind of done. But let's see. I haven't finished this set yet or started it, and I know it's going to be incredibly difficult, but I know I'm going to move on to, I'm going to 200% Metroid Fusion at one point, mostly because I don't know how many of you knew the history of Metroid, at least how it was originally conceived. It was supposed to, but if you're interested, it was supposed to be conceived as sort of like Aliens, where you're this lone person and there's this thing out there that's just, you know, better than you, and it can kill you easily. And so Metroid Fusion has that sort of Terminator slash alien that is just better than you and can kill you if it ever catches you. And so there's this, I'm well aware that probably people that listen to this and probably most of the people here probably love Super Metroid, but like Metroid Fusion has that sort of terror of like, oh gosh, this Sax, as it's usually called, is out there. I need to flee, or I'm going to go back to the checkpoint or save point.
Metroid Fusion definitely has its own little unique style, just the atmosphere, the tension. It really does feel distinct from the rest of the series in that regard. I didn't know about those direct inspirations, Alien and the others, but now that you mention it, it makes a lot of sense. Always fun learning about video game history. But circling back to what Draco was saying about missables, I actually think if you're the kind of person who gets stressed out over missables or just really dislikes them, Metroidvanias are probably a good genre to gravitate toward on RA, because if you think about it, there aren't many things you can make missable in a Metroidvania. Then games, by definition, are structured around being able to go back anywhere at any time. In my personal experience, the only real missables I've encountered in Metroidvanias are damageless bosses, which can be a bit of a pain. I know that when I play through these games, often I'm just not in the mood to do a damageless boss, so I'll be like, I want to continue the game, so I'll just advance now and come back to that one later. But then, of course, you could usually only fight the boss one time, so it ends up this awkward situation of, I either have to do an entire second playthrough, or I need to do these right now before I can play the rest of the game, or I need to back up my save before the boss so I can revisit this later. But other than that, there really aren't missables in Metroidvanias, at least not in my experience. Maybe you guys have some counterexamples on that.
I just want to talk a little bit about damageless. The death fights in the Castlevania games, those fights sort of end up feeling like bullet hells, that genre, because what Death will usually do is he makes a whole bunch of sights that spawn throughout the screen, and so they'll just pop in, and if you're in the wrong space at the wrong time, you gotta reset.
Yeah, Death has always been challenging, even going back to the NES Castlevanias, but I'm thinking in particular, I sometimes get the handheld Castlevanias mixed up, but I think it might have been Aria or one of the GBA ones, I think, where you're fighting Death, but the screen is wide. It's like, I think, two screens wide, so those scythes might be off screen, and they're hard enough to dodge already, but when you have a scrolling screen, that just adds a whole wrench into the proceedings.
And I'll be quick, but at the same time those scythes are moving, Death has also got his own game plan going.
Of course, it wouldn't be Death otherwise.
Well, speaking of, when you speak about damageless boss into any type of Metroidvanias, yes, I mean, it's true, like, you can, like, create, like, if you want to, like, a save part, and then, but, like, if you're really into the moon, or just not, like, put it aside, and you're just, like, stubborn to the death, just trying to do this, it's like, well, I have to do this now, because if I don't, I can't. I don't want to move further. It's like, it's not fair to move further to just make sure you don't want to come back later on, or just if you miss anything. But they're like, those bosses are really like into like pattern, and you have to learn those patterns, but sometimes you just cannot figure it out, and you're struggling to the death to just trying to find those. So missable into those bosses, I think, is the, like, not the worst, but it's close to that. But I wonder, like, do I prefer doing like damage as bosses over the actual missables, one item you specifically need to grind, or a specific fight you have to fight? Because if you just go too much into the story, which I think happened to me in the Paper Mario series, I think I speak about it like a long time ago into the podcast. Like, if I missed like the two badge from the Peach on the castle, if I just did not give them to Mario already, I will not do the entire like 20 hours playthroughs again. So I wonder what is worse. It's like, this is, the boss is worse than the items, but yeah, I mean, those are the worst.
That's a tough argument. Oh, Draco. I mean, because damageless, like, you get really stressful, and you can always be like really timid and nervous when you're doing the damageless bosses. But at the same time, missables, kind of thing where you have to like either do it without a guide or look it up. And some cases, there might not even be a guide for this kind of missable. So I mean, it's kind of like the toss of a coin. You know, you got the nervousness and the stressful tension of doing this boss damageless, and you don't know when it's gonna end. Or the endless searching of this one particular moment. I think Bendy was asking about, you know, what can you do in a missable kind of situation in a Metroidvania? And I think there's not a lot of things you can do with it, but at the same time, there's like, oh, you have to collect all these objects. Like in Super Metroid, there's a bunch of upgrades you have to collect, and some of those upgrades are like optional. And I guess you could probably count it as a missable if you like finish the game or you go like past a certain point and you can't get that collectible. But yeah, I mean, the same part, those collectibles are usually, you can go back and get them if you need them. It's kind of like a RPG kind of sense, where if you don't think you have enough energy or enough power to progress through the game or to defeat this boss, you can go back and get this out power up. And I guess in this sort of way, it's kind of the same way with grinding. I guess it kind of all circles back in within each other through RPGs and Metroidvanias. They're kind of like, I guess, one and the same, maybe.
I'd like to take a moment to go back a little bit. Go back all about the retro. Let's look at the origins of the Metroidvania genre. A lot of people would argue, oh, Super Metroid and Symphony of the Night, right? But I'm saying, let's go real far back. Let's go all the way back to, like, Metroid 1 and the really early versions of this type of game. Before we go any further, I want to ask you guys, who here has actually played Metroid 1? What are our levels of experience with this?
I played a little bit of it. I haven't really got very far into it.
Same here. I did watch Retrosexual I want to say he's finished almost all the RA set, but I have not put that much time into it. And actually, a lot of it comes back to like how difficult it is to heal. Like, you have to grind to heal your life back to full.
Are we talking about the Metroidvania on the NES version? Because damn, that game looked awful.
that is the version I was thinking of, Draco.
Yep, that's the version, the one that looks awful. Did you have anything else to add, Draco, or did you just want to say it looks awful?
Nope, I have no idea about this game, and I think I'm gonna leave it at there.
So yeah, I think the thing with Metroid 1 is there are a lot of arguments out there that the game has not aged well. I personally agree, but for people who are into retro, I really think it's worth playing. I like seeing, you know, I love the history of video games. I like seeing the origins of where things started, even if they are a little rough to go back to when we're used to more modern quality of life improvements. But there are a few things about Metroid that have not aged so well, but there are a few things that are surprisingly good for how old it is. I think that Shin makes a good point. It is hard as heck to heal in that game, and for how challenging it is, especially if you don't know the game inside and out, that's a problem. Another thing is, that game didn't have a map, and we're so used to having a map is just a standard of the genre these days. The issue is, on the NES, the game had good graphics for the time, but everywhere looks kind of samey. It's very easy to get confused when the environments look very similar to one another.
Definitely.
And I think it's one of those things where if you're a kid with all the time in the world, you could really get lost in that game. And how many games were there like that at the time, truly, where you could just really get fully immersed, fully lost in the world? Zelda 1 is another one that comes to mind for sure, but there really weren't that many at the time. You start the game, there's this eerie ambient noise that is basically the audio. The audio design is so good, you guys. I could go on and on about that in particular. But I don't know, it's just, I'm a bit young. I wasn't there when the game came out. I didn't play it then. I can't pretend I did, but I could put myself in the head of people who did. And it just seems like a really incredible experience. I think that there was something special about playing that game when it was new that we can never truly re-experience, but there's a lot to appreciate looking back at it for sure.
I mean, that's very true about what you're just speaking about the map, because we're so used to using a map which like refer you, like if you do like a dungeon, or like even when we did play like Pokemon Colosseum, I think we like can see a little bit of the, I mean, a map somewhere, but like, I think like even like maybe like some Dragon Quest, I think, is it the Dragon Quest like for Game Boy or all of that, you don't even actually see a map. So sometimes to try to find the path where you need to go, you encounter a lot of monsters without even seeing a map. I really enjoyed those games where you can actually see where you go and at least having like a hedge of where you go. Like some Tales of Symphony have the map. I mean, a lot of games have a map, which I think into any type of RPG is the best, but where you're just like into the void and you don't know where to go and you have a lot of spawn there, what do you do? It's very stressful. I have a little other question if you people want to ask you, is like, if you can choose, do you rather go for Metroidvania or you prefer other type of RPG style traditional RPGs? If it's up to me, I would go for RPGs, typically RPGs, because I think RPG is the best, one of the best genres, except slash, except some, I would not say the double F words, the double F games, but some of those, like most of those, are pretty damn good Mario RPG. I think I would say Mario RPG is the best RPGs. But beside that, this genres is better than, for me, Metroidvanias. I know like Metroidvanias have a lot of, I mean, I would say like they're shorter, more fun, casual, and depend of what you have to do. But in general, they're most short term than the actual RPGs. So I'm very curious to see if you go for, are you like more RPG or more mature, and why?
It's really difficult for me to compare the two because they really are such different genres. Although it is true that there are quite a few Metroidvanias that do have some RPG mechanics, like the more Vania style ones that have leveling up and collecting gear and a stat screen and all that stuff. But I think for me, it ultimately comes down to what am I in the mood to play? Some days I'm in the mood for something more like an RPG or maybe even specifically a JRPG or a specific type of RPG. Other days I just want to explore and get lost in a world. And I guess that's really the main thing that these games have in common. Both the Metroidvanias and RPGs are two of very few genres where I feel like I could really get lost in the world, just get fully immersed. But I really can't say that I outright prefer one or over the other.
I think for me, it would more so be the Metroidvanias rather than the RPGs, because for me, it seems like you can pick up and play these Metroidvanias rather than in an RPG. You might be on a middle of a quest, or you might be going to a town, and then when you save in like, you know, open area and you come back to it, you don't really know where exactly you're going. You don't know where the storyline is going after like, you know, weeks on end after not playing it. But with a Metroidvania, you might be able to be like, okay, well, I know that I have to, you know, look at the map and see where I haven't explored yet. Maybe not so much of, you know, the first Metroid, but I think that, you know, those Metroidvanias are pretty easily to be picked up and played rather than RPG. And I don't know, for me, thinking about RPGs makes me think, like, how much time do I have to play this RPG? Because if I get into this RPG, how long is the intro? How long is me going from town to town? You know, it seems like a time commitment rather than, again, the Metroidvania is more so of a pick up and play, and then you can save whenever or save in certain locations, and then you can just pick up and explore wherever else you need to go.
So something I like about some the Metroidvanias is Metroidvania does, unless you're trying to 200%, it does almost offer something for everyone. So when I was younger, I wasn't that good at noticing patterns with like bosses and stuff like that. I'm much better at it now. But like, if you're not very good at like, you know, avoiding damage and that kind of stuff, for something like the Aria of Sorrow, Dawn of Sorrow, like all those GBA and DS Metroidvanias, you can grind. And on top of that, you have access to items. So, like, if you're just taking if you're just getting stunlocked by a boss, you can buy potions or find potions so that you can reheal. Or, I remember in Circle of the Moon, you could try to stand still so that you could just heal like that. But for people that are more, like, focused on, like, noticing patterns, reacting to them, you can level a lot less, not use items, and then beat the boss similar to a to the old Metro, the old Castlevania games, if you want.
We touched a little bit about this idea of completion, this 200%, either on RA or just playing the game casually. And like, you know, like we've said, Metroidvanias are famous for having a lot to do. They have big maps with all these little nooks and crannies and all these little secrets hidden throughout. So I wanted to ask you guys, what makes a good secret in a Metroidvania? Whether it's a secret area or a little side area or something that makes you feel smart, right? Something that makes you feel like, oh, I had to think outside the box to find out how to get this hidden item. I think for me personally, it depends on the game. I know that Super Metroid is so loved by many, and I love it. I think it's fantastic. But I feel like one of the game's shortcomings, for me anyway, I feel like the entire comments are going to roast me for saying this, but a lot of the times when I find secret things like missile pickups in Super Metroid, it doesn't feel good for a couple reasons. One, it's not that big of an upgrade. It doesn't feel like I found something that made me tremendously stronger. And two, often the ways that these things are hidden don't really make me feel smart. It's often things like, oh, I guess you could bomb that wall, which I just know because I tried bombing that wall. Or, oh, I guess there was that one spot that I used the scanner thingy, which once you get it, you might as well use it in every corner of every room to find everything. And it just happened to be a secret. Like, I don't feel smart. I don't feel like I've solved a puzzle. And I think for me, this is a very difficult thing to balance when designing a Metroidvania. But if you could develop some sort of environmental puzzles that just make you think a little bit and make you feel smarter for pulling them off, and then you get some sort of hidden item as a reward, like, that's the ideal for me. And I really struggle to think of Metroidvanias that strike that balance for me. It's, I don't know, it's tough. Maybe this is yet another situation of me not knowing what I want.
Bendy, I think this is actually a situation where you do know what you want. And I am in agreement with you. I remember, like, what is it, for Super Metroid, I know the final battle isn't even decided. It isn't mostly decided. Well, like, the super missiles are where the power comes from. By the end of the game, what, like, the regular missiles and the power bombs, they're not going to do you any good against, like, Mother Brain, for example, or they're just going to do less damage. I know power bombs are almost useless unless you want to heal via the Crystal Flash, but that have very specific requirements. But for me, I agree. I think for a Metroidvania, what it might depend on is like descriptions in the items for when you first get them. So like for those of you that might have played Dawn of Sorrow, there's a couple power, like there's a couple times where you can find these little secret books that'll say things like use a screaming item at the bell tower, or throw out curry and a Mothman will come out. And then that's how you get another couple of items with that. And like, I totally agree with you, Bendy. There's a lack of almost explaining. You almost either need a guide, or you're just experimenting, just continuously changing out your equipment in order to figure out, oh, I actually need this item in this very, very specific thing, and I've never had to use it before. And yeah, that is a fine line. And even the creator Iga, of this genre, I don't think he's even mastered it. And it's actually part of that is the reason why I'm not a big fan of Ritual of the Night, because he has these really esoteric times where it's like, I don't think there's any way I could have figured that out. And I'm not super smart, but like, there's no way I could have gotten that naturally. What do the rest of you think?
Well, I think Benny already know my answers, because I will surprise you with the Draco ways, because Draco ways is normally typical of me. Never read a thing. And then if I learn something, well, that's very amazing, because like I can feel smarter, because I like, yeah, I knew it, how it's just how it's done. Oh, I just find this naturally. Wow, I'm so impressed by myself. I'm so good. I never read a thing into RPG that doesn't where. And it's not even a genre where I would want to read. So for me, when I explore or when I get something, I was like, wow, oh, that's amazing. Yeah, Draco, if you have read it, you should know it was there. But normally, like, into some games in general, like, I don't feel the satisfying to just find a piece of heart or finding an item to Metroidvanias or any type of thing, because I don't know. I mean, it's just an item. It would just don't give you much reward, I feel. And some of the time, they're just so high in items, which could be frustrating to know. And if it's on a place where you can even get there back to it, it's more frustrating to just forget about it. Yeah, I mean, it's just like fighting an item. It's just like, it's just almost like pulling something out of the bowl, you know, like it's just an item. So, but if you don't read anything and you just play a Metroidvania or RPG and just find something, or just doing a side quest without even reading, you got something, it's amazing.
See, I think Metroidvanias are the perfect genre for you, Draco, because while it's not true of all of them, a lot of them just throw you into this world with no real exploration. It's just like, time to explore, figure it out on your own. There is sometimes some exposition, or there might be some like hints or little bits of story sprinkled throughout. But a lot of the time, it's just like, it's up to you to explore, figure it out, dude. You're on your own. But I think we're getting near to the end of today's episode. I wanted to bring up one final topic for you all. Let's think about the future of Metroidvanias. It's a genre that a lot of people love, but I feel like it's in a sort of weird state right now. Right now, I feel that Metroidvanias are kind of being carried by indie games, you know, things like Axiom Verge, Hollow Knight come to mind. But where do we go from here? How do we continue to advance and evolve the genre, make it bigger and better? There's a big group of people who argue that Super Metroid is the pinnacle of the genre, or Symphony of the Night is the pinnacle of the genre, depending on who you ask. And I guess the question that pops into my mind is, where do we go from here? How do you make Metroidvanias better than they already are? Has the genre peaked, or can they get better? So I just wanted to pose that to you guys. What would your ideal Metroidvania look like?
I think for me is if you find the best, let's say the best mechanic or new way to see something, or to use maybe like an items or anything in the game where it never done before, but keep the simple ways of, let's say, like a Metroidvania style, like with like you start with the Super Metroid, Supervania, but you just increase more how the beauty of the game could be, because always the modern games have such beauty graphic, but also just to have like something which is simple enough, which work great, and having like anything, like example, you're playing the odd Mario Odyssey, and you're just adding like a Cappy where you just like you can do like a double jumps, and then you have an extra movement. It's just still the same simple mechanic, but you just push it a bit further, and it create like a new aspect of the world. So I think for me, this is how I would see like any type of game, like even like the Paper Mario series, the RPGs. We all love the GameCube, and I think the GameCube was the best with stories, sideline stories, plus anything for a Paper Mario's. And for so long, we wanted to do having something similar to that, but it was never delivered that way. So, but I still like, I think like some games should go back and see how like the Super Metroidvania style for to having like a base, but just try to implement something better.
I think for me, for my ideal like Metroidvania game, I would like it to be more explorable. Like, I always like the aspect of exploring the area and, you know, finding those nooks and crannies of like different additional power-ups or different life upgrades or something that's, you know, explorable, even with, you know, double jumps, wall climbs, you know. Those like little like small things of movement, like Draco was saying, the movement abilities are really cool. And I think that, you know, if Metroidvania had more of those, along with a lot of different nooks and crannies, I think it would be a really good Metroidvania game. And I think maybe this, you know, Metroidvania already exists, and I just haven't found it yet. But I think that would be like my most ideal, you know, Metroidvania with like some really good combat, maybe more of the lines of like a Castlevania. But I think what it comes down to is explorability of the general like area would be really cool.
All right, I've got kind of two things to say about this. I think there's still more that the Metroidvania genre can go into. I mean, it seems pretty. It seems in general, with maybe the with maybe an exception of Shantae, that the Metroidvania genre is fairly comfortable, and it's usually a good choice to select an environment that's sort of gothic horror. You know, like Castlevania. Or, let's see, what else? Hollow Knight is also kind of like grim and horror-y. I'm going to say something possibly controversial here, but here's something else to consider. I've heard a reviewer, and I'm actually in agreement with this, has labeled Dark Souls as a sort of Metroidvania. But as opposed to getting something like, let's say, a double jump or a wall jump or super speed or something like that, you're actually, what you're gaining instead is more like skill, because there's still heavy exploration. You need to pay attention to patterns, enemy patterns, boss patterns. You need to gain a certain amount of skill, whether it's dodging, blocking, parrying and counterattacking, and each area has a different sort of style. So, you know, what works for you at the very beginning or the very beginning area would not work for you at the end. And there's a whole bunch of exploring, getting items, and progressing to become greater than you were at the very beginning of the game. Because at the very beginning of the game of Dark Souls, when you're first trying, you're nowhere near as skilled, or have a double jump, I guess, in a certain manner. Or I remember in Dark Souls 1, you could get a orange ring that would let you just walk through lava. So in a way, that's a sort of Metroidvania. But I think there's still depths to be mined for the genre, even if it's not necessarily retro.
We're in an interesting state with modern gaming where it seems like just about everything is an open world action RPG. It's getting to the point where do you draw the line between what is a certain genre and what isn't? I personally don't think Metroidvanias are dead. I still think there's potential to make them bigger or better, even in the classic style. But, you know, the question of what should count as a Metroidvania is a deep philosophical question that I don't think we're going to get to the answer of today. So at this point, I think we're going to wrap up today's episode of RA Podcast. I'd like to thank you guys for joining me today. Shinsiro, thank you so much for sitting at the round table with us this week. You've been an awesome guest. I really, really enjoyed hearing your insight and appreciate you having here. On that note, I'd like to remind our YouTube listeners, any sort of engagement, likes, and comments, they really help us out. And RA Podcast is available on other streaming services, including Spotify. On that note, thank you so much for listening, everyone. This is Bendy Human and the RA Podcast crew signing off.